We've all heard of fasting, but what if you could get the same massive benefits without the downsides of not eating? The Prolon 5-Day Program is the only patented diet that mimics the effects of fasting and leverages nutrition technology. It's scientifically proven to trigger a fasting state while you eat, protecting you from the adverse side effects of traditional fasting diets. Try the Prolon 5-Day Nutrition Program and see for yourself today. Prolon is offering listeners 15% off site-wide, plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe to their 5-Day Program. Just visit ProlonLife.com. That's ProlonLife.com.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. I hope you're ready for the most dippable chicken in McDonald's history. Dip it in all the sauces. Dip it in that hot sauce in your bag. Dip it in your McFlurry. Your dip is your business. McCrispy strips at McDonald's.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Patti Bliss, a.k.a. the Queen of Ireland, is an artist who's contributed to Ireland's extraordinary recent social change and, of course, brings the house down regularly with his performances. Going back-to-back with Tara Flynn in a double bill of two brand-new shows in what is promising to be a hilarious but also moving night out for a limited run at the Abbey Theatre on the Peacock Stage, beginning with previews this coming Friday. So Banty himself, Rory O'Neill, herself, I never get it right. But
I don't care, Pat.
You don't care. Yeah. So I'm not about to fall into any pitfalls.
No, but the thing is, you know, for lots of people, gender is very important. But one of the beauties of being a drag queen is
either or.
Yeah, I don't care. For me, it's a playful concept.
Now, tell me about the structure of the show, first of all, because it's two shows in one.
Yes, so both shows are an hour long. Tara's on at 7. Then you get an hour break to go to the bar, have a cheese and charcuterie board, if you want. And then I'm on at 9. And you can if you want, go. You could go on separate nights. You only go to Tara's and tell me.
And can you book it that way?
Yes, you can. So you get to choose. But if you book tickets for both of them, it's cheaper. You get the discounted price. And because each show is only an hour, you know, it's the same really.
So for people who are absolute fans of Tara and hate you,
they can go to Tara's show and go home. Yeah,
yeah. And vice versa, of course.
That's what my parents will be doing.
Now, you and Tara have actually worked ensemble together, have you, before?
We've done individual gigs together or whatever. Not really. But we're both, you know, associate artists with This Is Pop Baby, who used to be the Enfant Terrible of Irish theatre, but now they're too old to be called that. But we both worked with Pop Baby for a good few years. So we're always crossing paths, you know.
Now, I don't know how much you can tell us about Tara's show, because you can tell us lots about your own show. But maybe you'd describe what Tara says her show is going to be about.
Well, what's interesting about it, we wrote the shows entirely separately. She wrote hers, I wrote mine. And it turns out there are a lot of sort of themes that chime with both. They almost sort of speak to each other. Now, that might be a consequence of we're both exactly the same age. Yeah. And we both...
She'll say thank you very much for that, Rory.
Well, she would want me to say that she's a few days younger than I am, which is true. But also, we both maybe had sort of similar, you know... she was in the stand-up world, I was in the drag world. They have a lot of similarities there. Both ended up sort of being accidental activists and sort of became quite known for that, even though that's not what we set out to be. Mm. And so those things maybe have colored the shows. So both the shows actually reference, you know, being in your 50s and refinding your purpose in the world. And they both, you know, talk a lot about our fathers, which all sounds very serious and all of that. But they're both also great crack.
So the whole idea is, although there are serious moments, that it is an entertainment.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Both Tara and I will firmly say we were entertainers first, you know, and last. And if you end up thinking about something or learning something along the way, that was entirely accidental, but also good.
Now, a return to the Abbey stage. I mean, most famously, your speech from the Abbey stage, it went viral globally.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I am a neighbor of the Abbey. Like, I literally live 100 meters away. I pass it every single day. When I did that speech that everyone knows, I had just had my own show in the Peacock previously, not so long beforehand. So I feel like, you know, the Abbey it's in my neighborhood. They're my neighbors. I, you know, worked there. And so when they asked me to do that, you know, I was just like, oh, okay, I'll do this thing, you know, because they've asked. You know, think nothing of it. But yes, so I have a sort of a weird long little relationship with the Abbey.
And before you got to play on the Peacock stage, did you have an you know, a preconception about the Abbey that it might have notions about itself?
Kind of, but I think, you know, as is often the case in Ireland, it's very hard to have notions. And of course, the people who work in the Abbey are, you know, the same gas sounders that you find in any theatre, yeah. You know. You know, the sound man who works in the Abbey is the exact same kind of guy who's working, doing the sound in the project or wherever, yeah. You know. So, yeah, I mean, it is the Abbey. It is the National Theatre, darling. Yeah. But it doesn't feel any different when you're working in there.
Now, does doing a show like this, and I mean, obviously it refers to your own life, if these wigs could talk, yeah. It's called. Is that very different to doing a straightforward drag?
Yeah, I mean, well, in the sense...
I shouldn't have said straightforward drag. It's quite the opposite. It's not straight.
But see, the beauty about drag is it can really be anything you want. I mean, you know, doing drag is just like being a stand-up comedian. And, you know, there are some stand-up comedians that are right up your alley and you love them and think they're brilliant. And there are other stand-up comedians that you think yeah. are just awful and stupid and annoying. And drag is really the same. It's just it's a sort of a vehicle to do other things. But the kind of drag that most people think of when they hear the word drag... you know, obviously there are, you know, that's, I came out of that world. I spent years running around nightclubs late at night, you know, making a fool of myself, you know, for free drink tickets or whatever. You know, you are going to a theatre show, but I happen to be using drag, you know, as part of it.
Does being in drag give you a license to say more outrageous things than if you were in, you know, a jacket and trousers and an open neck shirt on the stage?
1,000% it does.
1,000%.
I mean, I always compare it to being like the court jester of old. You know, the court jester was allowed to tell the king he was fat or whatever, and if you did, you'd get your head cut off, you know. Yeah. And so it's because people are kind of in on the joke. You know, they understand yeah. that you're playing a larger than life character, and larger than life characters can say larger than life things, and it sort of, you know, people allow you to say more, but also you allow them to say more back to whatever. Yeah. Like it's a sort of a shared understanding that we're in this kind of weird space where you don't necessarily take everything at face value, yeah. that there's a lightness to it.
But if you have a go at somebody, you know, you have maybe a crack at some public figure, political figure, whatever it might be, yeah. it's hard to imagine them taking an action to the High Court for something that a drag artist
has
said.
It has happened in the past. But because people, you kind of understand that there's a heightened quality to it. Yeah. It's what it is, one of the great sort of joys about drag. Like, you know, when I spend years running around nightclubs in drag, like I'd meet a total stranger and they would like tell me the most intimately weird secrets or whatever. Because I think there was a sense that they think, oh, this big bloke dressed, you know, as this big cartoon won't judge me. I think there's yeah. this sort of feeling that, you know, I'm not going to be shocked, so they'll tell me whatever. Of course, there's usually a bit of booze involved in a nightclub or whatever. But, yeah, no, I think that's part of the fun of it.
Yeah. Yep. Now, what about this show, if wigs could talk? What's it about?
It really is a lot about, you know, drag has changed and the world has changed. And, you know, I started doing drag when I was a student in the 80s here in Dublin. And obviously it was an entirely different world, especially for a queer person, you know, living in this country at the time. And everything has changed so hugely and so dramatically. And the drag world has also changed. It used to be so underground and, you know, yeah. off the mainstream. And now it's on television every bloody night. And, you know, there's a million drag queens running around. So I think I had to sort of reassess my place in the world of what am I actually about?
Yeah.
You know, what am I for now? Because things have changed so much. So it's about that. And sort of generally, I guess, getting older.
I presume it's not a farewell to drag.
No.
Like Lily Savage, as you...
Yeah.
You know.
Well, a lot of older drag queens eventually do fall out because, it's a sort of... Well, it has always been a very precarious way to make a living. And also, it's a very uncomfortable way to make a living. You know, the corsetry and the heels and gluing a giant big nylon hat to your head every night. Yeah. And all that stuff. Like, it's bloody uncomfortable. And as you get older, you feel that more. But I still... love it. I still enjoy the silliness of it. And also, not to sound too serious about it, but it's a kind of a superpower or something. You know, you put on all this stuff and it makes you this you know, larger than life, completely unignorable character. And you know, I have a sort of armor. And yeah. People can say whatever they want to me when I'm a dragon, it just bounces off me.
You know, they talk about the tears of the clown. I mean, is it to mask, in some ways, the tears of the clown? I mean, are you always as up as whenever you've been in studio with Neil, whatever, whenever we talk, you're always up?
Yeah, well, no, I'm not, of course. You know, like any performer, sometimes sometimes it feels like work and you just want to go to bed. But the drag queen's job is to always look like you're having a good time, yeah. No matter what you feel like. But, you know, I think every actor or performer will tell you that. So, I mean, there definitely is part of that. But it's not tears of a clown. I think when I was younger, maybe the sort of the angry tears of a clown, yeah. I think I originally got into it out of a sort of anger. I was pissed off that, you know, the world yeah. around me and how, you know, queer people were treated and all. And drag has always been a kind of this, here's all the stuff that you tried to sort of sneer at me about, you know, being feminine or, you know, liking the glitter and all that stuff. Well, F you. Here it is.
In spades.
in spades. So I think there what used to be that. I've calmed down a bit. I'm not so angry anymore. But
the world, as you mentioned earlier, has kind of caught up a bit. Not entirely, but
no, and actually you've struck something there that part of the show is about, in that you know, after the marriage referendum and all that, I think I, like a lot of people, thought, oh God, we've really, you know, yeah. that's a done deal, and for a while I really sort of thought, God, you know, can we all just you know,
but it's a bit like the Good Friday Agreement. It's a work in progress, and you've got to keep working at it.
And I see that more and more as time goes on. There's a bigger pushback, and you know, every single day on the internet now, somebody calls me a paedophile or whatever. Yeah. And that's, you know, that used to happen in the 80s, and that all sort of went away. Now it's all back at a vengeance. There's definitely a pushback against all of the things that we've sort of, all the progress and things we've achieved.
If you're on Twitter or whatever, you're so accessible for that kind of sling and arrow that's
absolutely
thrown at you.
So I've been reinvigorated of late in a way, sort of by the knowledge that, you know, you have to protect, you know, the what you've achieved, sort of. You've got to really stake your claim and hold the line, sort of.
Finally, I should ask you about Cable Street. How fares it without traffic?
It's lovely. It has the potential to be even more lovely and incredible, because the council were very slow to do anything with this. They stopped traffic and then they abandoned it for 6 months. Now, in fairness to them, you know, after a lot of, you know, nudging them and complaining a bit, they've now started to do some stuff with it. And I believe they've, you know, sort of hired a landscape architect now to really, because I really think here's the opportunity for the, you know, the city to say, this is what the city could be. You know, if we stop constantly prioritizing vehicle traffic over everything else, this is, you know, here's a chance to say this is what the city could be. So I think it needs to be done well.
But do you have any sympathy for the traders who are saying, like, our business has been decimated by this?
You'd have to introduce me to one that's actually saying that. There are some, of course, listen, there's hundreds of traders on the street. There's a couple of them who believe that there's been some down in the trade, but they'd be very much in the minority, and I honestly also strongly believe that they're going to change their mind. Like, if you went on to Henry Street or Mary Street or, you know, North Earl Street or Grass Street, and went into any trader and said, do you want to let the traffic back in? They'd all say no. You wouldn't find a single one that would say, because it just takes a little time for people to readjust. I have full, you know, belief that it's going to be wonderful.
All right. Well, in the meantime, the show is starting with previews on Friday, the two shows, both Haunted and If These Wigs Could Talk, and then running until December.
Until December 3rd. And obviously, abbytheatre.ie, you know, cheap tickets to get to go to two shows.
Rory, thank you very much for joining us. Rory O'Neill, a.k.a. Panty Bliss, thank you very much for joining us in studio.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
McCrispy strips are now at McDonald's. I hope you're ready for the most dippable chicken in McDonald's history. Dip it in all the sauces. Dip it in that hot sauce in your bag. Dip it in your McFlurry. Your dip is your business. McCrispy strips at McDonald's.